The presidential motorcade has just passed through heavy crowds in downtown Dallas and was circling through the fringes of the business district when three shots suddenly rang out.
Destroying the media lies and dismantling the narratives. One story at a time. It's the Adrian Slade Show.
Make the United Nations great again. Manga! Make the Paris Climate Accord great again. Why not? I'm Adrian Slade. Thanks for tuning in. For those who think that this week's show is going to be an hour-long Trump bash fest, I mean, we got a lot of that in last week. I've got some unrelated stories I want to cover, so we're going to make this short and sweet and move on to other items. But Trump was speaking to the UN General Assembly this week, and he originally was quoted as saying, "In recent years, the United Nations has not been successful due to bureaucracy and mismanagement." That's all the UN is. One giant bureaucracy. So if you're going to streamline it and remove all the bureaucratic hurdles that exist, wouldn't that shift the organization to a direct-to-individual relationship? Wouldn't that make you a globalist cuck? Because the UN is the gateway drug to globalism? Now, to his credit, he's really kind of hitting them on some things that are very important. So, like I said, I am not a Trump basher. I am not a never Trump, because those people are cultish in their own ways. But I am somebody that's going to look at things objectively, because my sole grounding is on the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and how we further a limited government movement. Now, where he deviates from that, I'm going to call him out, and when he gets it right, like he did on a lot of his points, then I'm going to give him praise for it, like he did with the North Korea side. You know, many people are like, oh, he's up there touting the horns of war. He's war-banging and war-hawking, and he's... No, he wasn't. He was trying to tell the United Nations, hey, this is what you're designed for. So America's not going to be the only one knocking down missiles, which he said he would most likely do if some of them fly and there's the ability to take them down, which rightfully so. At this point, let them do it, because North Korea is trying to bait us into a war. And instead of going in and directly attacking North Korea, we can still give a sense of power and a sense of strength by taking out their missiles that they're just launching over top of Japan. So then that kind of puts the ball back in North Korea's court. Are you going to do something to us? Are you going to hit Guam? Are you going to hit Japan? I mean, so he's trying to get the rest of the community to back him, much as he did in Saudi Arabia, where he said, hey, look, you got a problem with radical Islam. You guys need to get on board. And I'm down for that. That's great. Go right ahead and do that. And really, what he also said about Venezuela was true, too, which we'll get to. But remember that the United Nations, this is the same program, the same organization that placed Iran on the UN Economic and Social Council's Commission on the status of women. I mean, you can't go uncovered in Iran. In fact, one girl who was raped was put to death because she was raped. I mean, it's unbelievable. They're on the Human Rights Council, Iran. The Legion of Doom Star Wars bar of the United Nations is also that same place that Hugo Chavez said smelled of sulfur after George W. Bush finished speaking. And Ahmadinejad just basically lambasted us. But we have to realize that this organization is a bureaucracy that hates America. So how we plan on making the United Nations great again, President Trump, I have no clue, because it was never great. It never had a great track record. It was never great when its UN peacekeeping mission soldiers, whatever you want to call them, were out there committing war crimes and raping people in the Congo. I mean, these people are... There's never been anything the United Nations has done that's been worthy of anything. And so we need to keep that in mind. We also want to look at some of the statements that he said that I thought were actually good. You know, he basically attacked Venezuela at its core. And I thought that was perfectly fine. We needed to do that. His stance on Venezuela, stating socialism wasn't poorly implemented. It was faithfully implemented.
The problem in Venezuela is not that socialism has been poorly implemented, but that socialism has been faithfully implemented.
By the way, listen to that crowd response. Listen to that tepid response when Donald Trump calls out socialism. But the one thing I can say about what Donald Trump said is amen for that. Because that's the problem. They went all in. When Venezuela decided to nationalize its oil industry, and when they decided to peg their currency against the oil industry, you know, when gas was $4 a gallon, oil was like $100 a barrel, money was coming in hand over fist. And so what did this socialist utopia, what did the leaders do? Instead of using that money that was coming in for that period of time, for that little boom of a period, instead of using that to rebuild the refineries and rebuild the infrastructure that is giving them the way to be economically successful, they blew that money. And I guess they thought, oil's always going to be high. You know, like many people did when they're buying cars. Oh, well, you know, gas is always going to be $4 a gallon. It's just the way it is. And then look what happens. It drops down to $1.99. You know, gas just dropped. Next thing you know, oil prices dropped right along with it. Russia's economy starts to tank because Russia has pegged their money against oil as well. And Venezuela collapsed to a point that they're sitting on their own oil reserves and they cannot even mine it. They cannot refine it. They can't do anything. They have no way of doing it because they didn't put the money back into their infrastructure. But you know what happened? They now have to import oil. That's socialism right there. They're sitting on reserves, the biggest cache of oil in the Western Hemisphere, arguably bigger than Saudi Arabia, and they can do nothing to get it. So there's your socialist utopia. And he's right in saying that we should, you know, rip them for that. He gets up and says, oh, you know, in America, we do not seek to impose our way of life, but rather let it shine as an example for everyone to watch, which I agree with as well. And see, the problem is, and I've been getting this whole thing about, well, you know, he's kind of like Reagan. Trump is not like Reagan in the least. And in fact, many people who are really mad about what he's doing with the Paris Accord, where he's thinking about going back into it. Well, you know, I mean, he's putting out statements from his administration saying he's not, but where he's making deals with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi and flirting with going backwards on the Paris Accord, you have to realize there is no fundamental ideology with Donald Trump. And people just dismiss statements, you know, during the campaign. Many of us who wanted a true conservative were out there saying, hey, did you remember what he said a couple years ago? And everybody scoffed it off. Just same thing as Obama. He gets up there and says, oh, I want a fundamental transformation of America. And, you know, all of us are like, holy crap, this guy wants to redo the way the world is. He wants to redo the way America is. And what does his defender say? Oh, yeah, he's not saying anything crazy. Now, he just wants to, you know, transform America with the Democrat Party ideology, which is crap. He definitely wanted to fundamentally transform America, and he's done it. Look at Antifa. Look at what's going on with the college campus. Look what's going on just in general with people's view of socialism. He has met his goal, and we didn't take him at his word. Donald Trump, the same thing. I mean, look at his stance on healthcare. He said he wants healthcare that's going to cover for all, and it's not even a Republican policy. Look at his DACA stance, just to name a few. He believed that Dreamers should stay. He believed that government would take care of everyone on healthcare. He said so himself, and we can hear the clips.
So how do you fix it?
There's many different ways, by the way. Everybody's got to be covered. This is an un-Republican thing for me to say, because a lot of times they say, no, no, the lower 25%, they can't afford private. But
universal health care.
I am going to take care of everybody. I don't care if it costs me votes or not. Everybody's going to be taken care of much better than they're taken care of now.
The uninsured person?
Right.
Is going to be taken care of.
They're going to be taken care of.
How?
I would make a deal with existing hospitals to take care of people. And you know what? This is probably...
Make a deal. Who pays for it?
The government's going to pay for it, but we're going to save so much money on the other side.
Ask Michelle to actually physically go across the street and tell the family,
right,
of 25 years to get out of this country, she wouldn't do it because she's a good person.
But here's the problem with Mitt Romney in this situation. He came out and say it's a magnet and he disagrees. But in 2007, he was calling for the same exact thing. Newt Gingrich fired back and said, here's your clip from Meet the Press from 2 years, 3 years ago. Does that bother you?
Well, actually, he didn't strongly disagree. And in fact, a lot of people are really curious as to when he'll say something because, you know, from I just saw something on television where they were saying that he really hasn't taken a stance or a very strong stance yet, and he hasn't said anything about what Newt said. So let's see what he says. But look, this is a matter of this isn't conservative. I'm the world's most conservative person. This isn't conservative. This is compassion.
Is it amnesty?
I guess to a certain extent, for a very limited number of people, it would be considered amnesty. But how do you tell a family that's been here for 25 years to get out?
That's tough. Or if their kids are born here, they stay, the parents leave, and that's what
right.
Newt Gingrich's contention
right.
is. How can you be the party there that's pro-family and dividing the family?
Example, but you have people in this country for 20 years. They've done a great job. They've done wonderfully. They've gone to school. They've gotten good marks. They're productive. Now we're supposed to send them out of the country? I don't believe in that, Michelle, and you understand that. I don't believe in a lot of things that are being said.
But we're supposed to sit there and say, you know, he doesn't mean that. He's a businessman. Remember that? That was always the argument. He's a businessman. He had to donate to Chuck Schumer. He had to donate to Bill Clinton. He had to say these things because he was a real estate developer. He's just business. Just business. But yet we are still sitting with Obamacare. We are looking at DACA that is going to be implemented through Congress because I have no faith that Congress is going to go against it. He's cutting deals with Pelosi and Schumer. And one of the interesting articles that I read was that they were talking about the relationship in Politico. They were talking about the relationship with Trump, Schumer, Mitch McConnell, and Paul Ryan. And this is from a White House official. He says, Schumer just talks to him. You get Mitch and Paul in here, and there is no personal connection. I mean, what do you think about that? It's pretty amazing. I would have to say it's probably because he has donated to Chuck Schumer. He has worked with Chuck Schumer for years. I mean, in fact, Business Insider actually wrote about this. They actually said that one of the biggest Democrats that Trump will ever work with was somebody that he worked with when he was in New York doing real estate deals. He donated money to, he was one of the biggest campaign donors to Chuck Schumer. And the quote from Business Insider said, I mean, I've contributed to Schumer. I contribute. I've known Schumer for many, many years, Trump said, and I have a good relationship with him. The fact is that I think it is maybe that we all get along. It's the time we do so. And see, that's the thing that people have to realize is that he actually knew Chuck Schumer and has that relationship. He's never had that relationship with Paul Ryan. He did donate to Mitch McConnell up against Matt Bevin. Matt Bevin would have taken Mitch McConnell out. We wouldn't have been dealing with him as the Senate Majority Leader, and we would have had a strong conservative in there. What happens then after Trump donates to Bevin or donates to Mitch McConnell to defeat Bevin? Bevin ends up being the governor of the state. I mean, it's unbelievable. So you have to realize that Trump, when they say, "Oh, well, you know, he's kind of like Reagan," no, you can't equate Trump with Reagan. Sorry, Trump. You can't, these people will say, well, you know, Trump is just like Reagan, and then turn around and say, well, you know, he's not an ideologue, so you can't expect him to be conservative. They've immediately nullified their point. Reagan was entirely an ideologue. Entirely. He took the Barry Goldwater conservatism platform and implemented it into his mindset. It was natural. It was almost religious. He understood the gospel of conservatism, and he accepted it. And then he lived it out. Yeah, he was once a Democrat, and that's what everybody points back to, but sometimes you have to wander in the wilderness before you appreciate the new perspective of exiting it. You have to see that the people you thought were on your side moved away from you and went crazy. Like I talked about last week, that's what happened to what I call the new conservatives that aren't really conservatives. They saw that their party left them and that their party was basically alien to them now. They didn't agree with what they said. They turned around and said, well, I guess that I'm conservative. Reagan didn't do just that. Reagan actually went, well, why am I conservative? And then he took Barry Goldwater's stance. Then he understood the Constitution. He understood the Declaration of Independence, something that a lot of us who were in between the Never Trump side and the Trump side, and who wanted somebody like Ted Cruz or Rand Paul or, you know, somebody, a strong conservative, we were left going, that's what we did. We fortified our conservatism by understanding its roots, just like Reagan did. And he did that after he noticed his Republican Party left him. So you have to become a new creature by seeing both sides. You know, progressivism is easy. It takes no effort to just say, well, the government should fix it. I mean, we see an issue. The knee-jerk reaction is, well, somebody must do something. And the default setting is government should do something. But to be able to rationalize that individual liberty and other options, including self-reliance, are way more effective, and that should be the take that should be employed, is more thoughtful and requires a grounding in conservatism. It takes more thought and rationalization than just ceding freedom over to politicians. It requires more thought and understanding of personal freedom. But to simply equate Trump's lack of grounding to Reagan's full-blown conservatism is short-sighted at best. It's like saying, well, you know, Tim Tebow and Colin Kaepernick, yeah, they were both football players, and they both had a stint in playing baseball. Well, they must both be Christian, because they both played football and baseball. Nope, not at all. No one understands what's required. You know, one of them understands what's required of Christianity. The other has no idea. And you can pick who those two are, regardless of the similar resume. So to use simple historical traits as equivocation, it's ridiculous. It's what's the core values and principles that drive you. It's what fills your being and becomes what guides your decisions. If you don't have this, why should we support you? I backed someone who had it ingrained in their being, but if he sacrificed it, I would disown him in a heartbeat. When you base your beliefs on your bedrock principles and values, the one going around selling the vacuum cleaner door to door, he doesn't even matter, because he may not be on the same foundation. The only reason anyone assumes Trump is some great negotiator is because he wrote a book about it and told us so. That's all. I don't remember anybody telling me the amazing stories of the incredible deals made by Donald Trump. I mean, he did make that one deal to have Polish immigrant labor come build his tower. I mean, I guess that's an amazing deal, but I just want everyone to understand that Trump is almost a blank canvas with inklings of his Democrat former past. And if you really butter him up, he will do what you say. And yes, he could be a political battering ram to wreck the system, but conservatism is being wrecked simultaneously. And we don't know what he's going to do with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. If they start really laying on the accolades, he may work with them even more and work against what we've wanted. And we've got nothing that we've wanted outside of Supreme Court justice that we hope doesn't turn out to be another Justice Roberts. So it's still early in the presidency, of course. I'm going to let him go about his way and hope that he does what he says he does. But rotating out his conservative core within his administration, not getting done the things that he said he was going to do, not finishing his cabinet position filling, and then working with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi just to give a middle finger to the Republicans? It's kind of disturbing. Back in a second.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
In the last segment, we were talking about taking people at their word, their literal word. When Obama calls for fundamental transformation, we should have taken that seriously, especially given his past, his history of socialism, Chi-Town communism, that's where it was birthed. You know, you look at Frank Marshall Davis and Jeremiah Wright, we should have taken all that seriously, but we didn't. We just said, it's no big deal. You know, what president would hate America? That's crazy talk. I mean, same with Trump. If he's going to say he wants health care coverage covered for everybody, well, then he demands Congress to pass a bill that's a light version of Obamacare. We should be taking this all seriously, taking him at his word. Typically, unless you've actively changed the way you act and you've had a pivot point in your life that you can convey, past history is indicative of future actions, and without that change, we might as well just go off of your past history to judge what you're going to do in the future. We also need to put people's words through the lens of something called intent. You know, when a lawyer judges, you know, or presents a case in front of the judge, intent always gets factored in. When somebody's interpreting the law, the intent of the law gets factored in. So the intent of the intentions of their words, that should be the driving force behind how the same exact statements on one hand can be funny and on the other hand be insulting if intended to be something other than what it is. I mean, that's why you can say a phrase and in a joking manner and be taken as a joke versus saying it in a manner of, you know, anger or resentment or hate. That's intention. So let's take a look at something that we saw recently. The Alabama State Senate race. You know, the race for the Senate. Luther Strange was appointed by Jeff Sessions' former Senate seat. He was appointed to Jeff Sessions' former Senate seat by former Governor Robert Bentley as soon as Jeff Sessions became the Attorney General to Donald Trump's administration. So he's extremely rhino-leaning. I mean, it's no surprise that they would have put somebody in that would back Mitch McConnell's every living, you know, platform. He has fallen in line with Mitch McConnell on almost anything Turtlehead wanted. So his defeat by a true conservative can tilt the Senate towards a Freedom Caucus direction. And Judge Roy Moore is the man who can do this. Now, you know, people are wondering, hey, Steve Bannon and those people that want to actually drain the swamp, as much as I can't stand Steve Bannon, those people want to back Roy Moore. And don't hold that against Roy Moore. He just happens to be the guy who's moving in a direction that aligns with some of the things that they like. But Roy Moore is not a Steve Bannon nationalist by any means. He is actually a true conservative. And Roy Moore is feeling opposition by President Trump, who is backing Luther Strange. And what they say is, well, you know, Luther Strange, we know he can win. I don't know if Roy Moore can win. Really? Is that the same argument you made against Ted Cruz as to why he couldn't be president? Is that the same argument that we made here in the state of Virginia against Ken Cuccinelli? That, well, we can't really fund him because he's too conservative. He may not win. We're going to need a rhino. Why are we refilling the swamp? Why are we replenishing the swamp? So, of course, NBC News, seeing that Roy Moore was a front runner, decided to do a nice little hit piece. Roy Moore, the Republican front runner in next week's special Senate election in Alabama, referred to reds and yellows fighting in a campaign speech. Moore, the ultra-conservative former Chief Justice of Alabama's Supreme Court, lamented racial divisions in his remarks on Sunday. We have blacks and whites fighting, reds and yellows fighting, Democrats and Republicans fighting, men and women fighting, he said. Now, real quick, on the side note, what is the first thing, if you're a religious person, what is the first thing that comes to mind when you hear reds and yellows, blacks and whites? I'm just going to leave that there for a second. So they go on with this article. Red and yellow are widely recognized as racial slurs. Video of Moore's speech was made public by a Republican tracking the race and first reported to The Hill. Let's rewind that statement. Video of Moore's speech was made public by a Republican tracking the race and first reported by The Hill. So the Republicans, in an effort to destroy Roy Moore, regardless of whether or not they would lose the seat to a Democrat, obviously the Republican establishment favors Luther Strange. Just like the Republican establishment yanked all its money away from Ken Cuccinelli and left him to die in front of Terry McAuliffe, Clinton's little boy. So moving on with the article. NBC News also obtained the video. Responding to criticism about his remarks on Facebook late Monday, Moore quoted the popular Bible school song Jesus Loves the Little Children, written in the 1800s. Red and yellow, black and white, they are precious in his sight. Jesus loved the little children of the world. Remember that? This is the gospel. If we take it seriously, America can once again be united as one nation under God, Moore said. polls show, Moore leading Senator Luther Strange, the Republican appointed to the seat vacated by Attorney General Jeff Sessions this year in Tuesday's Republican primary runoff. Moore and Strange will hold their first debate Thursday, which is interesting because we have found out that he's actually doing a debate without a moderator, because Roy Moore found out that the moderator was going to be a Mitch McConnell rhino appointed person. Great, great. Yeah, let's have a debate where we can smear the conservative once again by the establishment. And once he figured that out, that's when he said, hey, I want a Lincoln Douglas moderatorless debate. And he got it. So that ought to be interesting. We'll try to cover that here in just a little bit. Finishing up the article, President Donald Trump is supporting Luther Strange and will campaign for him on Saturday, though many conservative figures have lined up behind Moore, who is running as the anti-establishment firebrand. Moore, who has suggested that September 11th terrorist attacks were punishment from God, often mixes religion and politics. He also said that the violence that's happening across the nation with Black Lives Matter and all that is judgment from God, okay? He was removed from the state's top judicial post twice for doing so. First time, he was refusing to remove the statue of the Ten Commandments he had installed on state property, and the second time for refusing to follow the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling allowing same-sex marriage. So that is why it was in the speech. That's the first thing I thought of when I saw the article at the very top of the line. As red and yellow, black and white, they're precious in his sight. This Jesus loves the little children of the world. Do you not remember that? I mean, have you ever heard Roy Moore speak? He's a Deep South guy with that old-time religion. I mean, I guess Sunday school hymns are now racial slurs now. In a day and age where cotton plants sold in vases for home decor are considered racist, it's not unheard of to see outrage over something that's completely misconstrued. If an ESPN commentator can be fired for saying an athlete who just happens to be a minority was using guerrilla tactics, if a D.C. mayor, the aide to the mayor, was forced to resign over saying the word niggardly, which is an adjective meaning stingy or miserly, that's traced back to Middle English, a language spoken back in the 15th century, I guess this is the world we live in. We can get fired over the stupidest things, and everything we say is racist. Anything's going to be twisted into an offense. But when we start to look at that thing called intent, you can tell his intention behind what he said. There's no ill intent. He didn't go, those damn reds always taking stuff back, and them yellows with them shifty eyes. That's an example of bad intent. The media understands they must be taken, they got to take every measure to attempt to destroy the status quo. And that's the reason why we're seeing this magical emergence of white supremacy, this new phenomenon of this white supremacy movement. It's the reason we see the comparison and the compassion for the comparison of white supremacy with the Republican Party and the compassion for the Antifa movement. We see the left justifying violence and advocating for anyone who is attacking a white supremacist or a quote white supremacist. Much of these people can't even identify one from an average person. They'll just attack them for wearing a red trucker hat that says, make America great again. There isn't some large white supremacist movement going on. This is simply a new way to vilify conservatism. Any conservative speech, especially on college campuses, is dubbed white supremacy. Ben freaking Shapiro, who simply just showed up on a college campus to make the case for conservatism and has the knowledge and quit analytical wit to back it up, was labeled a white supremacist. You know what? White supremacists, they're not too fond of Jews. Nope, and Mr. Shapiro is a Jew. That guy rocks, by the way. If you didn't see the video of him at Berkeley, you gotta watch it, because he just schooled everybody with conservatism. But facts don't matter, and as Ben Shapiro said, facts don't care about your feelings. And when you fuel your drive and existence purely on feelings, like most of the college campus and most of the liberal side of the you know, the electorate does, you have to stomp it out. You have to destroy any vehicle that drives the facts into your garage. This isn't a new tactic. As a conservative, we've been labeled racist since the day I was born, since I could ever remember. Forget about the fact that the party that we aligned with, even though we're not really in the party anymore because they're leaving us, was birthed over outrage for slavery. Never mind that one of the earliest Republicans, Charles Sumner, a Massachusetts anti-slavery Republican, was beaten with a cane in the Senate chambers for delivering his Crime Against Kansas speech, where he just basically lambasted those who are advocating for slavery. Let's ignore that the first Republican president was Abraham Lincoln. No, the party that did this did a little musical chair switcheroo with the Democrats. It was their amazingly coordinated simultaneous trade of ideologies. Even Steven, call it the big flip, similar to the Big Bang. This is how they operate. Define your enemy. The problem these days is that it's taken root in the activist youth. They find purpose in fighting for something, only they don't know what to fight for to define themselves. So they back these violent movements as some purposeful mission to make things right. So be aware of that. And watch Roy Moore, because he is going to get attacked by the left and the Republican establishment. Back in a second.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
Welcome back. Again, today's show is basically take people at their word and what is their intentions. Obviously, Roy Moore wasn't intending to call people reds and yellows. He was quoting a Bible hymn, a Sunday school hymn that dates back to the 1800s. So then we get into Medicare for all. Bernie Sanders out there peddling Medicare for all, and he wants to basically double down and go for the single-payer golden ring. He wants to shoot for it. And what's interesting was he had a doctor on his show. I guess he's got a podcast, who knows. But he had a doctor on from Canada who basically destroyed his argument.
If I have a patient who's got migraines and I need advice about how to manage it, they might wait several months to see a neurologist for a non-urgent problem like that, or non-urgent surgeries, the classic example being a hip or a knee replacement.
So how long will it take me in the
hospital? You know, it depends on where you are in the country. Sometimes it's a few months, sometimes it's a year. In some places, at some times, it's been even longer than that people wait for a hip or a knee replacement. And I think that's totally unacceptable. I don't think that we should stand for it in our system. I think that there's no reason why people should have to wait.
And so right there, it's going to take a lot of time. If you live a certain distance away from these medical facilities, it's going to take you a lot of time for you to get through the bureaucracy. We know that. We know what Obamacare is going to do to America. It's simple economics. I talked about this on previous shows. The distribution centers that deliver the resources of whatever the government delivers is not going to be delivered by those individually throughout the country, hand to hand, interest to interest. The interest is now taken away from you and given to the government. So is the government interested in making sure that your well-being is covered? Or is your interest, you waking up finding out you got cancer and you want something done about it at age 70, your interest that thinks, I want to live to see my grandkids maybe 20 more years, your interest is now taken away and given to the government, who is now going to say, well, you might be a financial burden being 70 with cancer. Whose interest is it then? So when we give that freedom up to the government, we give our interest away. And then it's the government's decision, and it comes down to rationing. It comes down to a bottleneck to the distribution centers, to the resources that are divvied out. You know, if somebody's divvying out candy on the block, everybody stands at the door and waits. You know, Halloween's coming up, and if there's only one house in the neighborhood giving out the candy, well, guess who's getting the candy? The people in line. But if they run out of candy, that's it. The rest of the people in line get nothing. But if the entire neighborhood's giving out the candy, then everybody gets something. That's interest. And see, the funny, dirty little secret is Bernie Sanders knows this. Let's listen to this clip from back in the day when he talks about what economically will happen to the system given government-controlled healthcare.
Do that, for example, if we expanded Medicaid to everybody, right? Give everybody a Medicaid card. We would be spending such an astronomical sum of money that, you know, we would bankrupt the nation.
And so Bernie Sanders, fully aware that he will bankrupt the system if we go full-blown government-run healthcare. So why is he still pushing for it? It's because they advocate for a couple of things. Control. It's always about control. But where does this control end? It ends on a global level. Make us interchangeable with every other nation. Make us identical in, you know, fundamental makeup. Make us identical in policies and how things are handled. so that when the time comes for us to merge into a global governance, it'll be an easy act. It'll be natural to flow right into a global situation. It won't take much to it, and the Democrats advocate for that because the Democrats want to be the party that controls all of it. It controls the world. They become the elite class. And you and I are sitting down here going, wow, now we're in a position where we can never thrive. Back in a second.
This is Adrian Slade.
The Adrian Slade Broadcast.
So we watch the left ramp up their utopian platforms of Santa Claus benefits and entitlements, you know, like free college and Medicare for all. That sounds great, doesn't it? Like Bernie Sanders is doing, you know, this, it's all liberal control. Not only is it that, it's also, in my mind, to make us interchangeable with a global government movement that they are in control of. I mean, everything that the left is pushing for, go on Agenda 2030. Go on the UN's Agenda 2030 plan. Every bit of it, it reads like the Democrat platform. So they want to control it because they're the smart people in the room. They're the ones that know better than all of us. You know, you're too stupid to govern your own life. You're too stupid to govern your own children. You're too stupid to make decisions. You know, you need somebody like Hank Johnson who thinks, you know, the nation or the island of Guam is going to tip over and capsize with too many people on it. You need somebody overseeing your life like Sheila Jackson Lee, who thinks, you know, the American flag was planted on Mars, calls herself a millennial when she's like 70 years old. You need those people in charge because you're too stupid to do what you can for yourself. That's how they view it. And the right is trying to destroy conservative solid ones within their party as well. So you've got one side pushing this agenda and pushing this movement for control, and then you got the side that is actually fighting back, being destroyed by their own. Solid conservatives like Roy Moore. You know, Judge Roy Moore is now going to have to fight the establishment and the left. So you've got that going on. We have to realize that we need to take note of what people say and take it literally. Like I've been saying through the entire show, take what they say literally. I mean, we have to hope that when Trump isn't on the world stage, you know, that and he's not reading this great speech. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from what he said, but I don't think he wrote all of that himself. It actually sounds like something Nikki Haley and Steve Miller wrote, you know. But when he's not on the world stage reading a great speech, we need to make sure he's not going to fall back into his tendencies, his Democrat tendencies. We need to make sure he's not going to fall into giving up our domestic policy grievances out of proving a point to his party or, you know, because he's just reverting back to his fundamental founding. I mean, he may even be out there mispronouncing country names like Tanzania or Namibia, you know, out there just yucking it up. And while the media is laser focused on his bumbling of African nation names, which most of America probably doesn't even know how to pronounce it anyways. Heck, they don't even know the, you know, all the points in the First Amendment. They don't even know the separation of powers. They don't even know all the branches of government. Do you think they know the African nation names? So I can cut Trump some slack there. You know, he's up there talking. He's going a mile a minute. He's probably going to mispronounce a name or two. But they're turning that into some sensational news story. And the real story is that Trump was praising the country of which he cannot pronounce the name. He's praising their universal government-run healthcare. Yeah, they fought Ebola and all, but that doesn't really bode well while we are fighting to remove Obamacare with all the silly proposals that we've had, especially with this latest one where they try to pretend to display some, you know, semblance of federalism. I mean, funny how federalism is suddenly touted when a good chunk of the party has just bailed and is moving towards a new party that touts federalism in its name, like the Federalist Party. But Linda Gramnesty and Cassidy did it. And McCain, again, might be the one to be the deciding factor as to whether or not it goes through. Now, the interesting thing, and I put a poll up about this on my Twitter, at Rants Out Loud. You can follow me. You can live tweet me during the show as well. Is he going to vote for Linda Graham, his butt buddy? Is he going to vote for his proposal because they're BFFs? Or is he going to sell them down the river because, again, he wants to stick it to Trump? Never mind the American people, what we want, and the majority of us want the daggone thing removed. So take people at their word. Take them literally for what they say, and don't write off anything they say as, well, it's just this, or I think he just means that. Don't let the meaning be defined by you. You define what they say. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Adrian Slade. You can listen to me on Talk America Radio every Saturday morning, the Liberty Channel, 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. The replay is in the evening on the Liberty Channel at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Saturday. You can tune in Saturdays at 7 p.m. if you miss it on the Justice Channel. And the following morning, Sunday mornings, 8 a.m. on the Justice Channel on Talk America Radio. Find the podcast, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, Spreaker. Donate and subscribe if you want to help the show out at patreon.com/Adrian Slade Show. Follow the blog, adriansladeshow.com. Get the free Roku channel in the streaming store, Adrian Slade Show. Look it up. We'll see you guys next time.